I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 622, Disney Pixar's The Soul.
I don't think, is there
the? No, there's not, but I like to add those when they aren't there and forget them when they are.
The Real Spoilers.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Fast and Furious, or Fast and the Furious.
All of the Furiouses.
A Fast.
I mean, you know, the original Fast and Furious did have a "the" in it, yeah, though.
I know. I'm old. That's why it confuses me. I'm so old that I remember A Fast and Furious.
And or.
Yeah. And Fast or Furious, which is exactly how I would expect Vin Diesel to use grammar.
That's correct. Yeah.
Well,
so I guess let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find us while you're there. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/realspoilers, where for, no, you don't have to pay for that one. Sorry, I'm half asleep. I worked last night. So where was that?
I mean, Facebook. You can if you want.
Facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. The group is called the League of Show Sharers because one of the easiest and freest things you can do to help the show is to share an episode on your social media channel. So people who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Librarian Cynthia, Julianne Jordan, Travis Tewitt, Matt Reedy, Ron Johnson, Ralph Tribble, Chris Williams, Alex Carlo, Gabriel Lugo, Laura Conley Quiddick, Chris Sanders, Pat Andy, Tammy Sherman Powers, Jason Weese, Chris Falls, Carl Clarkson, Chris Magic Man, and then moving over to the Twitter sphere, Nerd Revert, The Movie Journey Podcast, Corey Tatum, Ronnie Castle, In Session Film, Reviews Beyond Time, Invasion of the Remake, Michael Dean, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd Podcast, Dan Buffa, Colby Mack, Feelin' Film, and Rosa at Latinx Lens. So thank you very much for sharing the show. And of course, if you'd like a way to help us out that isn't free, we'd like that too. It's called Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content, and you just help us out in case it's a little rainy day fund for whenever the computer craps out. And sometimes people even get a free comic from Joe.
That's right, $7, and you get a free comic book from me, from my own collection.
Woohoo.
Not saying it's anything good.
No cherry Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, no, those are signed, sealed, and delivered.
Yeah, he has those bagged and boarded for an entirely different reason.
Yeah, they got to protect them.
Yes. So we have another Blu-ray giveaway. How about that?
Woo. Yeah, we're moving on up.
Kevin wrangled another one for us. So we're giving away a copy of Love and Monsters. Dylan O'Brien stars. It's out now on Blu-ray and 4K Ultra HD. Certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, this fun-filled adventure delivers epic action and laughs as a young man makes a dangerous journey in a monster-infested world to be with the girl of his dreams. Own Love and Monsters now on Blu-ray, 4K, and digital. Rated PG-13. It's from Paramount Pictures. You'll know because there's a mountain at the beginning. Kevin, how do they win that?
All you have to do is go and comment on social media. So we'll have a post up on Facebook and on Twitter. And so you just reply with why you want to see the movie. It's that simple. And I believe we have 5 of these Blu-rays to give away. We'll mail them to you. So very simple. And I've heard good things about this movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I heard that it's a lot of fun. And as Tom mentioned, it stars Dylan O'Brien, who I think he was in The Maze
Runner.
He was
the main character. He's the reason The Maze Runner 2 got delayed.
The maze or the runner?
He was the runner.
So in this, is he love or a monster?
You have to watch
question. Love is a monster.
Ah, there you go. This is real spoiler. Yeah. we only do that on episodes centered on the movie, so we're not going to spoil that one. You'll have to watch to find out. But yeah, he was in, I think it was the third Maze Runner movie, and
he was in all of them. He's the main character in all of them.
Yeah, he's the maze. I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah,
no,
he's
the
runner.
I think the third one is one he got injured on.
Right.
It was the third or the fourth. They just didn't continue with it after that.
Yeah, they're like, nah, never mind.
So anyway, but I've heard a lot of good things. I think our friend Aaron over at Feelin' Film, he saw it and said how fun the movie was. I haven't seen it yet, but I would like to. So maybe I'll enter the contest. Can I enter the contest?
No,
too?
You cannot.
Dang it.
That's not how contests work.
Oh, I'll just have to buy it, I guess. But anyways.
It's the Brad Hyen rule.
Contests. So anyway, but yeah, just enter the contest, leave a comment. I've heard it's a fun movie, so I'm looking forward to watching it.
Awesome. Anyway, there's all that. Let's dig into Disney Pixar's Soul.
I gotta just when you think they've reached, yeah,
you know, there's just an audio based medium, right?
yeah. Just when you think that Disney and Pixar have, or I guess Pixar at this point, have reached the tippy top of what they're going to be able to do visually and storytelling wise, they top themselves again.
Yeah.
And this is absolutely phenomenal. Like, I don't, from a psychological aspect, mm-hmm. from a spiritual aspect, which I'm not, but this, it definitely delves into that world.
It does a really good job of talking about, like, some existential questions and issues without really stepping on the toes of the religious, which can be a delicate dance.
Big time.
Because some of them are crazy.
Some of them?
I said yikes. Some.
That's like true. The flying spaghetti monster.
Sure. but you know, I will say I have two quibbles with the movie. I liked it. It's wonderful. But I have two quibbles. One is, I'm a little emotionally exhausted by Pixar at this point.
Makes
sense.
Complete sense.
Can we just have something fun? You know what I mean? Like, not.
I feel
not,
like that's the Disney stuff, though.
Disney stuff is
the fun stuff.
But it's like, I wish I'd get something just flat out fun from them again.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's been a bit. And even though they've been good, I'm
what do you think the last fun, quote unquote, fun one was?
Oh, man.
I mean,
Dory?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Probably.
I mean, they still deal
that
with
also
serious...
gets you with a gut punch.
Her losing
I guess
the
it's
parents
not...
and stuff. It's still,
yeah,
but it's not like the whole movie's based around the working emotions and what happens when you die.
Yeah, Bill Bong doesn't kill himself so that Joy can make it
right,
through.
Right, yeah. Like, that's, you know, and so, like, and then before that, I don't even know.
No, I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
Like, they have definitely...
And they've always had emotional gut punches in their movies, even like the fun ones, like quote unquote, like Toy Story, right? And that's part of what makes them stick with you. So, like, I'm not downing it. It's just like, I feel like we've had a lot of like meaning of life type movies out of Pixar in a row, and I'm like,
right,
and so. That, you know,
so Coco was all about the afterlife. It's just from a different cultural perspective, but
right.
That whole movie was that whole thing is about.
I wonder if they have upped their complexity because the people who are watching these movies have grown up. Right?
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
the people who, the
Toy
people
Story
who started,
kids, yeah.
Well, not even Toy Story kids, but the people who start, like the kids who started at Finding Dory are now old enough
you
at this point
Nemo?
To. No, well, when was Finding Dory?
Like a year ago?
Yeah, like two or
it
three
was?
Years ago.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What year are we in? 2021? Good yeah. Lord. Okay, yeah, Finding Nemo is a good example yeah. where those kids are now teenagers and, you know, maybe they have questions about stuff and they can handle more complex stories.
But they've always had that element to their stories. I mean, Toy Story comes out of the gate, even though it's
I guess that's true.
A silly movie about toys. I mean, it always kind of had that, you know, that existential angle, which is what make a lot of what makes them stand the test of time. So, like, I'm not trying to take a dump on it. It's just like, but it'd be like, can we get the other kind too? How about that? You know?
Yeah, but from my perspective, and when I wrote the review on ReviewSTL.com, the actual written review, which yes, there's those still exist as well. I questioned my review too. I said at this point, you just have to stop and ask: are these movies even for kids anymore?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing about this movie that says a kid can't watch it. But when you're going through this film, which I thought was excellent, I absolutely loved the movie. Watched it 2.5 times because I fell asleep the third, but just put it on to kind of get a refresher. There's nothing that would deter kids. There's nothing that offensive in it, but it also has some very heavy subject matter,
right.
And it isn't maybe as playful as some of the old Pixar stuff or a lot of the Disney stuff, and especially not as fast paced and crazy as a lot of kids' cartoons are now. And so it just doesn't seem like kids are the target audience, while they can surely enjoy it.
Right.
As well.
Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree. And I think, Joe, you made a good point. I think it was you that about I can't keep the two of you straight.
We're like that meme.
Yeah. But about that, like, it's kind of become that the Disney featured animation is the more fun end of the pool, where, you know, where Pixar is the more, you know, have a seat on the couch, tell me about your mother, end of the pool.
Jeez, yeah. Well, you know, that's true, because I just realized, was Onward Pixar too?
Yeah.
Jeez,
yep.
And that's, I mean, that gets deep with family and brother and fathers and losing loss. I mean, yeah, it's. I mean, and Onward is a blast. Onward's so much fun. I love that movie as well. Because, I mean, you know, and again, being adults, it's like we're going to be able to understand the material more. So just because they tackle that stuff doesn't mean there's not a lot of fun, really creative adventure type stuff, but it still is broaching that really complicated, deep subject matter. Not really complicated, but still like deeper than kids' movies used to be.
Right.
And so that's interesting to think about. I forgot, because 2020 was such a cluster.
Right.
That was that we got Soul and Onward.
It's almost like the forgotten Pixar movie.
When was Onward?
Like February, March.
February. It came
good
out
Lord.
Because it came out like right before the pandemic kind of took over. Because as it was coming out, people were like, should we still be doing this? And then, I think in its second weekend is when everybody kind of went, no, we shouldn't be doing this. And then they put it on Disney Plus early.
Yep. That's
no,
right.
They put on VOD first.
VOD. Plus wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, Plus was out, right? When did Plus start?
I don't think it was out yet.
Plus came out like right as the pandemic was ramping up.
I don't think it was out yet, because I feel like they would have maybe launched it.
No.
With that,
it was definitely out yet because Anna Kendrick had that knockoff of Elf movie last Christmas. So it's been around for over a year, or there wouldn't have been a Christmas movie.
Oh, wow.
I guess maybe at that point. Oh, well, but that's true, because the pandemic was just starting. So I guess they didn't quite have the, oh, should we just, you know, put
right.
it over
did they,
on.
Did they launch it with Onward?
No, because Onward was on VOD first, and then it went to...
Is that what they did?
Yeah, because I bought it
see that
for $20. That's why I remember
goodness.
It. Okay, so it came out, I think, in February, and so I saw it in the theaters, and of course, like, and I've been really locked down and, you know, adhering to the quarantines and stuff, so if I went to the theater to see it,
yeah, that's
it was
true.
People
I
weren't.
That's why I thought I took Bella to see it for sure.
Yeah, and people weren't not go like they weren't not going yet, because I was there and didn't think twice about it.
Yeah,
but then all that stuff happened, and it was really unfortunate, because the movie was really good, and you know, the new Pixar movie, and then it was like, oh, it just came out, but now people aren't going to the theaters, and so they were like, well, we'll just fast track it to VOD, that way people can still see it, and then it was still
that was the whole AMC thing. AMC got what this
no,
is how
it was
that
trolls.
Whole, Oh, was it Trolls?
Because Trolls just skip completely. Trolls.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
But
that's right. That's right.
So it was $20. And what was really cool about that was that it was not a $20 rental. They let you own it for that price, which was really cool because most of the premium VOD stuff that would come after, soon thereafter, was just a rental fee. So Onward was cool because I'm like, well, I love this movie. I'm like $20 and I can just watch it already and own it, watch as much as I want. I'm like, having seen it, I'm like, that's great. But anyway, yeah, the year is set being February of 2020 seems like a decade ago.
Yeah, and I think the movie opened soft anyway, and people were like, you know, is this the pandemic? Are people just not responding to this movie? And then, and the reviews, like, I liked it, but I didn't love it, and so it didn't crush it in quite the same way that some past Pixar movies had. And so, but then the whole, like, what does this mean for Pixar conversation just kind of got swallowed up because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And then they come out with this. You know, it's like, oh, we're back on track. Okay. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, all the things that you guys said are not untrue, you know, about the subject matters and everything. But, yeah, I really loved this movie. I thought it was very clever, very inventive. And when you think about that, the last film that Pete Docter directed was Inside Out.
It makes complete sense.
The 1-2 punch with examining your emotions, exploring all of that and adolescence and feelings. And then his next question is, what happens when you die? It's such an interesting double feature. Like it makes perfect sense, like you said. So I think it's a great
although
pairing.
Ultimately it's funny because even though it uses that framework of life after death, it's really not about that at all. Like
it's about finding happiness.
Yeah, because you know, the main character really never even gets past the threshold, you know. And it's not really about life after death. It's about life during life.
Well, and, sure. Right. And, yeah, you're right. That is the crux of it. But just the whole fact of, like, I'm not done yet. You know, you're living your life and, you know, make sure that while you're alive, you're living. You
right.
know, and not to
right,
spoil
right.
the end of the movie, but just, you know, when he says, you know, and I'm going to live every moment of it, it's that is the real lesson of it, is make sure that you use your time.
I disagree. I think it's got a more important that's absolutely a lesson of the movie. But I think there's an even more profound lesson that I really enjoyed in this movie, which is, like, not everybody gets to live their dreams, and that's okay.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Because
that's a great point.
So many of these kids' movies are about, you can do whatever you want. Hey, kids, spoiler alert. You can't.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, does this mean don't try? But it also means adjust your expectations and be willing to adjust on the fly and realize that maybe the path you wanted to go down and the path you end up going down are two different things, but that's not a bad thing, right? Like, and so...
It also could mean never give up hope either, because for Joe, he stuck with it. He didn't give up.
No, I get it.
He did what he had to do, and he kept with it, and he still loved jazz and never just quit playing completely. And then he got his shot, and then, you know, he had the opportunity.
But I think there's three messages. I think the third message is the thing that you want, you may not like, right? You work your entire life to get to this one the pinnacle, and you get there, and it's not what you thought it was going to be.
The Johnny Resnick conundrum.
Oh, that's a great point.
I've talked about this before on the show, the Johnny Resnick conundrum. Johnny Resnick, the lead singer of the Goo Goo Dolls. Sorry, he goes by John Resnick now. He's all grown up.
Whatever.
And, but, like, the Goo Goo Dolls started as a heavy metal band. They were signed to Metal Blade Records, right? And they have a song on the Nightmare on Elm Street 4 soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And right alongside Dokken, you know,
rocking with Dokken.
Or no, Dokken was the second one.
Dokken's Dream Warriors.
Yeah. But still, like, that's what they were going for. And then the Goo Goo Dolls become this kind of, like, light.
Well, they had Iris hit, right?
Was their breakout song. Iris is the bigger hit. Name was their breakout song.
Yeah.
Off of A Boy Called Goo. And but, like, they become this kind of, like, it was like, then they were kind of shifted and were going to be an alt-rock band, and then they kind of became more like...
adult contemporary?
A light alt-rock slash adult contemporary band. But, like, that band started as metal. You know, for all of Johnny Resnick's singing about Iris and you know, black other balloons stuff. And all that. Like all of these songs that were big hits for them. You know that the dude still loves the metal, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
That's what he like. He started a metal band. You don't start a metal band not loving metal, and so, and so now he's this kind of like light rock guy, like.
And they've had a hell of a career,
right? And so, what do you do when you find out that like what you're really good at maybe isn't what you love the most, or the thing that can sustain you, you know. You and your family and stuff, you know, but you still have this love of this other thing. Now what, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I think that's the advantage of this movie is there's so many different, messages and lessons that are being taught that are telling you, look, it's okay.
Right.
Like it's okay to fail, which is where Joe kind of was the entire time in this
and,
movie.
But see that, but, and, but that's the thing. I would argue he didn't fail. Right.
I mean, like, in his own mind,
he right. He failed because of how he had framed it. I'm not
yes,
a jazz
yes.
musician. So then I failed. And but he didn't fail. Right. Like,
no,
he found a job that paid well, had good benefits, as his mother liked to remind him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it would have vacation time and a 401k or and all, you know, I think it's actually 457. But you know what I'm saying? And you know, had all these things and but here's the important thing. Here's the to me, the great thing. Like, he kind of hacked the system because he got all those things, but he still gets to play music every day. He
mm-hmm.
still gets to share his love of music every day. Right. He gets to perform on some level every day. And like, but in his mind, he had framed that as failure, and it wasn't failure. Right. It's not the version of success he thought he was going to have, but that is successful.
That's a really tough thing, though. Like, it, and see, this is why these movies get really deep the more that you explore these subjects. So being a teacher, you know, and teachers don't get enough credit. They don't get enough money. They're very important to society. They shape the kids that will go on to do things. But it's just
some of
that.
Them. I don't buy into this whole sucking teachers thing. Like, I'm sorry, but like when people are like, teachers are angels sent to earth to love our children. And like, what school did you go to? Because every person I've ever talked to, when you get them off that message that we've been taught to parrot back, has at least five teachers that they want to punch right in the.
Absolutely.
So,
I've got five. For
there
sure.
are just as many douchey tyrant teachers as there are good ones. And so, like, this whole, like, teachers are all angels? No.
Well,
no.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I mean,
yeah.
Kids go to school for, you know, whatever, 15 years of their lives, you know, before they go to college or whatnot, and then they go for more. But
and some of those are even worse.
But
yeah.
they shape the children, and that's how they learn and get most of their education, because most, you know, most parents are at work, and they're not doing the homeschool thing. So it's
sure.
like, you're through adolescence and your development, it's like teachers are responsible for these kids that then they will go on to do whatever they do. And some of them won't do anything. Some of them will change the world. Some of them will invent Google. Some of them will save lives and be doctors. You know, they'll do all these things. So
right.
it's like teachers are so important with the things that they do. But I do understand, like, from Joe's perspective, that even though he is teaching these kids, that some of them will go on to be musicians. Like, clearly the girl in his class has great potential and loves jazz. You have Curly now, who's playing with a famous musician that's calling him up to fill in, and he was
right.
a former student. So you have his students going on to do these great things, but that was always his dream. And so I totally get the dual
nature. I get why he would be conflicted. I absolutely get why he would be conflicted. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, like, I think it's a good lesson for kids, and I don't know that they'll really necessarily get it fully, but I like to think on some level they will,
mm-hmm.
you know. And look, because also, let's not forget, when we get to the moment when he has his big moment on stage, and this is where I don't know if another, I honestly don't know if another animation studio could pull off the look on his face, because it's not dialogue, right? Like, I mean, it's,
no.
it, you know, when he walks out of there high on life, and then she's like, basically, see you tomorrow. And he's
see
like,
you tomorrow.
And he's like, wait, we're like, oh, yeah. Now it's my job, right? Like, now it's my job. I just do it all the time. Oh, well, crap, I had a job I did all the time. And I like that, too. And, like, you know, you just see all, there's not one line of dialogue. You just see all of it where he's just like, oh, yeah, like, I reached the pinnacle and, like, and, oh, like, yeah, it really didn't change anything about my life.
Like, I think that's what I mean about these, about the Pixar stuff is, like, just when you think that they can't get any better visually, they hit you with, I mean, this is live action level facial acting.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and
it's unbelievable.
And the backgrounds. Pixar, every film improves on the next. They're always working on things and testing new techniques. And this movie, you're from scene one. When you see Joe Gardner, voiced by Jamie Foxx, he's a part-time music teacher. And when you see him in the classroom, and most of the kids are disinterested other than that one girl that I mentioned earlier. But, you know, he's living this kind of just... You know,
he's living it day by he's not. I don't think he quite realizes the impact that he's making on some of these kids. He's just kind of there to pay the bills.
It's a side hustle. His job is just to break into the bustling world of jazz, and like that's
yes,
that's the other thing. Like the concert promoter in me was like, I was like, is there a big money in jazz? Like
maybe smaller clubs on the coasts.
Well, even when they show like. The like this Dorothea Williams is supposed to be like the dream job, right? And you see her performing. That club holds max 125 people.
Yes,
so
correct,
unless they're
correct.
Paying like $400 each, like you're all walking home with like $35. Like there's
no and well the other thing about it too though that we should mention is it's not that this dream isn't to be a rich and famous jazz musician. He loves jazz. He saw the going back forward in the movie, but when he was a kid, his father, who has passed away, that now has never gotten to see what he would accomplish.
Did they say if he was a musician, or is that just
I think he was a fan. He never made it to the big leagues.
He was just a fan of the music.
I took it as he was a working musician.
Yeah, he was never made it to,
but never made a, never made a lot of money, and was always chasing that dream while Joe's mother.
Paid the bills
with her shot.
Yeah, Joe's walking in his father's footsteps. He's doing the same thing. He's a musician, and he's middle-aged now. He's a part-time music teacher. He still hasn't made it to the big leagues, and so it's history repeating itself. But anyway, his dad takes him to watch a jazz musician, and he instantly falls in love with jazz. He saw how this person spoke through, in this story he tells in the beginning to his class, this person spoke through playing the piano, and it was this language that he took in and was enamored with, and that is when he decided to become a jazz musician. And so he's now grown up his entire life loving jazz and wanting to get there, and he's never gotten there. He's playing gigs on the weekends and nothing major, and so now here he is, and his mother is like, you've got a chance to get a full-time job. That's great. It has benefits, and you actually get to make money playing your music. He goes and he finally gets his big break to play with Dorothea Williams, because Curly, who is voiced by Questlove, calls him up and says, and I, you know, he's like bald, but his name's Curly. It's a little Pixar, you know, ironic jokes in there. It gives him a call to you know, fill in because someone else just ghosted on him. And, you know, he gets to finally the chance to audition with her, and he does the thing that he talks about, that when he saw that jazz musician, where he just escaped to this other world.
Yeah, his soul basically goes into this other realm.
Well, he was in the zone, is what they describe. When you go in the zone, you go, your soul goes into this this just otherworldly place, and so he finally gets his big break when she's like, wow, where you been all my life, or, you know, or like, where have you been hiding, and so he gets the gig. And well, real quick though, but before we get into this, what the whole plot's about, one of my main points was back in that very first scene with the classroom, when it's kind of dark and you see the sun shining through the window and the shadows and the detail, like, this level of animation is photorealistic. Not to the point where it's not enjoyable to look at, like, wow, this is really still like a creative art form, because it still has that animated feel to it. But the objects and the lighting and everything, it is amazing. Where there were some times where I had to do a double take, especially when they're moving around New York and the way the camera moves, where it looks like you're watching almost live action.
Yeah.
The Pixar.
Yeah, I
stuff
agree.
Is
but they can't get Luke Skywalker's face right. That's the.
Well, that's yeah. different. Quite a different division,
no, I
think. Yeah, Marvel Television and Pixar animation, I don't think, are the same.
I don't think. But here's the problem they're going to have, though, Kevin. I'm watching them on the same platform.
Well,
that's
yeah.
good point.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
That's a very good point.
You can't have it both ways and tell me that movies are TV, but don't expect this TV show to look like a movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like.
Right. So this is where it finally come, you know, so he finally gets his big break. He gets to play. Dorothy Williams says, come back tonight and we're going to play this show. And he's finally making it with one of the greats. And what happens? But he.
What a great Looney Tunes style.
I know,
yeah.
right?
I
was thinking the
so
same thing.
Good. It's so good.
He walks out of there and he's narrowly avoiding death at every turn, which I thought was really fun. Oh, the other thing, too, when you watch it a second time, you love it when they plant those little hints. When he's talking to Curly on the phone, he's like, if I could play with Dorothea Williams, I would die a happy man. And he dies after
good.
He
yeah,
does.
Right.
He didn't play the big show, but he still played with her. He narrowly avoids death at a construction site, and there's dogs chasing him and all these different things.
He dodges like a whole thing of banana peels.
Yeah, goes through traffic yeah. and just walks through, you know, as cars whiz around him at every, you know, every lane. And then he's like, oh, whew, that was close. And then turns around and falls right into a manhole.
Right. And which then, I think is, just, I mean, Looney Tunes written all over it. It was so good.
But, you know, and then this is where I think it's really gets creative. The imagination, and that's what I think one of the reasons that we've all fallen in love with animation and cartoons to a simpler extent in the past, is that you can, you know, whatever you can imagine, you can do. And, you know, you're not limited by real world physics and real world, you know, creations, and then go, oh, well, that doesn't look real or whatever.
Right.
I mean,
right.
we live in this animated world, and we now have, you know, Pete Doctor's vision of what it might be like when you go to the afterlife, and there's the great beyond and the great before. And I thought it was so inventive what they did with this, and how, you know, he's riding this escalator up to the great beyond, and everyone's just kind of lined up in place, and there's young people, there's old people he interacts with, and, you know, it just shows you the wide variation of there's people that pass away of all walks of life, ages, and all that. And so he's like, I just got my big break. It's not my time yet. I'm not going to give it up when I just started living. And so he decides to escape and runs down the escalator. And then he falls to the great before, we come to find out. And it's like the training ground for souls before they head to Earth. And they're trying to, you know,
finding all of their little bits and pieces that make them who they are.
Yeah. And then they finally match up with a body on Earth. And I just thought it was a really clever concept. I enjoyed seeing all that. And I had never thought of, you know, before people are born or whatnot, like how they might get their, you know, their
skills,
their personalities, and their purpose in life, or
I really liked how when they're talking about installing personalities, like it wasn't all cutesy. Like there were some ugly personalities getting installed too.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sure.
Yeah. So Joe, again, trying to get back to his body, gets sucked up by, I just want to call them the keepers, I guess. Like, I don't really think they had any, the Jerrys.
They're counselors, right?
Well, he becomes a counselor. Like, he grabs a name tag.
He's
and
a mentor.
He's a mentor. They're
right,
counselors.
Right. Yeah, but they're all named Jerry, which I think is great.
Except
and
for
all
Terry.
Like, except for the Terry.
But Terry's in a different department.
Terry's in a different department, so it doesn't matter.
But there's a pretty good voice cast.
The guy from the IT crowd.
Yep, there's Richard Ayoade.
Yeah. Is Taika Waititi in here at all? I just assumed.
No,
I kept doing the same thing.
His friend is from all his movies.
Yeah.
But you have Fortune Feimster.
Should I know who that is?
She's a comedian.
She had a Netflix special that's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're in the comedy scene,
and it's funny. I watched her Netflix special, and she's a lesbian, and it's a very large part of her comedy. But like, but it's also like her comedy was very, at least as I remember it, pretty family friendly. Like it wasn't. I thought it was really an interesting thing to see, like, not that you can't be a lesbian and family friendly, it's just normally you don't associate those two things in the world of stand-up merging, and so
sure.
I like, it was like, I'm like, oh man, this is really cool. Like, there's, you know, I'm like, somewhere there's there's lesbian kids stumbling upon this because it's not inappropriate and being like, oh, hey, that's okay. Like, and she's got a lot, you know, a lot of jokes about growing up lesbian and then kind of figuring it out. And it was really funny, but wholesome at the same time.
Yeah. Her stuff's not real vulgar.
Yeah.
Wes Studi is another one of the Jerrys. You've seen him in a lot of stuff. It's really, they've got a good voice cast for this film, and I really enjoyed the counselor stuff. I thought it was really funny. And then he's basically trying to sneak himself back to his body, where he's now in the what they call the great before, where it's all these tiny little souls. And so the way that, like, they mistake him for a mentor. And, you know, come to find out that there are some great mentors, right? So, like, we see all these famous people, like even Mother Teresa and who are some of the other ones that
dealt with Galileo,
Albert Einstein, I think.
Muhammad Ali. Yeah. The Muhammad Ali thing irritated me because Muhammad Ali is quite possibly the easiest impression in the world to do. And we got the worst Muhammad Ali impression
real bad.
I've ever heard in my life.
It was really weird. Yeah. It almost to me where I'm like, is this offensive? Because it just didn't seem.
Or you just go back and like pull a sound bite.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, that gets a little more complicated with
and expensive.
Rights and pay.
It sounded nothing like Muhammad Ali.
that was kind of strange. But so he gets mistaken as a mentor, which, you know, leads him into this journey where we find out that there's this soul number 22, voiced by Tina Fey, who has been mentored by all these greats, and no one can get a handle on her. Is she just isn't playing ball. She isn't really interested in.
She likes where she's at. She's got no interest in going
and getting out of there.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting, you know, when we talk about what is your purpose and people that want to make it, you know, to the pinnacle of their career or their aspirations and, you know, and then fall short and maybe instead of becoming a great jazz musician, become a teacher. Then you have people on the other hand that just are disinterested, that have no motivation, that don't know what they want to do, and not even people that just don't want to, but some people that, again, finding their purpose, don't know what they want. And so she's not even keeping really an open mind. And once she starts to experience life and see what's out there, you know, that allows her to kind of figure herself out. But there's so many people, and like in my review I wrote, there's something that everyone can relate to in this movie. There's something for everyone. And I think that they do such a good job covering all those bases. And that's what Pixar is so good at, is they can tap into something that people surely will find something to relate to.
Yeah,
for sure. So yeah, so they devise this plan where do they both go back.
She says that I have to, in order to go to Earth, you have to earn all these badges or check off all these things. And she has not been able to earn hers because she's not, you know, doing what it takes. None of the mentors can get her to do it. And he's like, well, you don't really care. So how about if I can get you, like, he makes a deal. If I can help you earn this, then you give it to me and I'll go to Earth and I'll find my body. And she's like, good luck, but okay, sure.
And what does he do? He figures it out for her, right? Like, they do all of this stuff together and she gets her pass.
Eventually, eventually. Like, end of the movie, yeah.
So my other quibble with the movie is that, and I think Disney or Pixar handles it well, all things considered. It was just, for me, an awkward narrative decision that they take their first black protagonist and put the voice of a white woman in him for 30% of the movie.
And you know, I saw that complaint online, and although maybe, I don't know, maybe we're not even the right people to even be able to comment on it, but you know. right. But, well, that's what I'm saying. But people can give that credence if they want or not. But, and I'll give you my opinion, which I think that we're just in this, we're in this culture now where people are offended by everything. And I think that this is a fun, it's not a white person voicing a black, like, it's, you know what I mean? It's not.
Well, they
like
have a scene where they show you that, like, she's like, I can be anybody. I'm just what your mind is interpreting. And I kind of feel like that was kind of their hedge against that.
Right, because you don't know. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they still chose to cast Tina Fey. Now, I'm not saying that, and I don't even know that casting a black woman would have been better. Like, that might have felt too, like, bending over backward. I don't even know what the right answer is. But I think it's a fair critique that, like, you know, and really what it comes down to is that when you don't have enough representation across things, then when you finally do have representation, then that person or character tends to get interpreted as meaning way more than maybe you intended it to mean. Like, taking it out of the realm of this movie, I know that, like, on The Good Place, some people would complain, there were some complaints about the character of Jason Mendoza, who I believe was supposed to be Filipino, about, because that character was, while very likable and very sweet, also very dumb. And there aren't a lot of Filipino characters on television. So Filipinos were like, we get a character and he's dumb. And it's like, where if that had been a white character, he doesn't represent all white people because there's lots of other white people.
That's an interesting concept. And while I definitely understand those complaints, you also then have to step back. Like, that is a valid complaint, and yeah, I totally get that. But then you also have to say that isn't a commentary. He is, if you want representation, then you're going to have to take the good and the bad with it. As in, if you're going to cast a Filipino actor and the character calls for him to be like that, you can't, if you start making those, you know, squabbles, then it's going to be like, oh, well, maybe we won't do that next time to avoid this. You know,
yeah, I
it's
mean,
like
it's a balancing act for sure. And I mean, I know Denzel Washington for years wouldn't take roles as a villain, right? Like, he just wouldn't do it. And because he's just like, I'm not going to be another black guy shooting somebody, like shooting good people, you know? And and when he finally did, he gets an Oscar. So you know, so it's like, I don't even know how to process that. Like, his mindset was like, look, I've gotten to the point in my career where I feel like I can take a role like this without it being a commentary, right? And but then also when he does, he gets his Oscar. And so it's
an Oscar that he should have gotten two times before.
Well, and I will say he gets his leading role Oscar. He'd already won an, I believe,
the supporting
for Glory. But still, like, you know, like, so, I don't know, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, I just, with this one, what ends up happening is they go through, I mean, we're really skipping ahead, but it's fine. They end up meeting.
I think we should bring up the hippy dippy guy. And
well, that's what, like, I'm saying. Yeah. So, like, they meet up with a character voiced by Graham Norton, who I thought was great. I mean, his show's awesome. If you ever watch his YouTube clips with the celebrities and everything, he is this sign twirling hippie guy in the real world, but he is able to tap into, like, he gets into the zone like Joe can with jazz. He gets into the zone by twirling his sign, which is just really funny. Like, he gets into the zone and he's able to go into this astral plane, this afterlife,
which
type thing.
I love the idea that, one, the people that you think are crazy maybe aren't so crazy.
Right.
And I also love the fact that, like, you know, the zone isn't just for art or for, you know, for music or drawing.
Yes,
or
it's whatever you're good at.
Whatever your jam is. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're pushing carts at the grocery store or if whatever. And I think that's another great point Pixar makes, that you can be really great at whatever you do.
I was a checker at a grocery store for 10 years, and there were days when I was checking where, like, I was in the zone.
Right.
And, like, I could grab any item in that cart and just, like, it wouldn't matter how I slapped it down, I'd get
You'd
the beep
it.
And I'd move on. Like,
dude, has anyone been to Aldi? Holy crap. Those people are always in the zone. Like, it's amazing how fast
they go. It's a prereq to work as a checker at Aldi. You must be able to enter the zone.
I mean, it is. Seriously. Like, they get counted and timed. So this guy is able to, you know, and he's this, like, hippie-ish guy that's able to go between the worlds because he's still alive, but he actually can understands it and can tap into it. And so they task his help to get back to, to get Joe back to his body.
Right.
In the meantime, he's being chased down by Terry, who's the accountant, that notices that the count is off. And while all the other counselors are pretty cool and, like, just trying to go about their day or whatever, Terry's sneaking around and he's like, no, it's off. And, you know, this soul is supposed to be going
the way they get him to travel in the real world, I thought was amazing.
It was hilarious way, because these characters are all made of like lines. They're very simple looking artwork.
And there's an old Disney short where they do a lot of stuff with like the lines moving.
Is that right?
I forget what it's called, but it's very famous, and it was very reminiscent of that.
That's pretty cool.
I know it looked familiar to me too.
I will also say we have yet another Pixar movie without a villain.
Yeah, there is no villain.
There's no villain.
Nope.
Like, Terry just wants the numbers to be right. He's not even mean about it.
He's just trying to do his job.
I like that. Well, that's, again, Terry's very good at what he does. Remember, he even presents himself. Well, she, I guess, because it's a hard thing because, like, Terry could be a male or female name.
Non-binary.
Terry is voiced by Rachel House, who you would know from Taika Waititi movies. She was Jeff Goldblum's assistant in Thor Ragnarok. She was in Hunt for the Wilder People. She's the voice of in Moana, the grandma. She's done a lot of voice work and been in a lot of Disney stuff.
Gotcha.
And but she's great in this movie. I think Terry's a hilarious character.
Terry's great.
But again, it's like Terry is the best at what Terry does. They're an accountant and they get every single number right and they're never off. And as soon as they are, Terry is tasks himself with hunting down, you know, that missing number.
That stray number, yeah.
Yeah. So I it's a really fun character, but you're right. Terry isn't a villain. They're doing their job and they're the best at what they do.
I also didn't realize Terry was voiced by a woman.
I didn't realize that either.
That's the thing. That's why it's kind of confusing, but I think also smart. You know, like all the Jerrys have the same name, but they're voiced by male and female.
Yeah.
Terry has a voice that I think.
Well,
I've
known women that go by Jerry, like Geraldine, but they go by Jerry.
Well, sure. That's what I mean, though. Like, but the Jerry.
You don't necessarily think of it as a gender neutral name, but it can be.
Sure.
If you stop and think about it.
Yeah, and I think that's what's smart is that each division has their different counselors or accountants or whatever, and then male or female, but they have that binary name. But I think, like, when I first watched it and before I realized that it was Rachel House, I also didn't know who the actor was, but I think once you watch it again and you know it's Rachel House, you can then hear that it's her.
Sure,
and it's just, but I think that's also very cool how they play that, where it's like, well, it's Terry, that's who they are. They're Terry, and they're whatever. I guess you could apply whatever you want to the character.
Like non-binary. I think she's just them.
That's what I'm saying. They're Terry. Yeah. That's the thing. So anyway, that is very fun, though, as Terry tasks themselves with hunting down Joe and, you know, getting everything in check. And, I mean, if you think about it, Joe's more the bad guy than Terry is.
Kind of.
Joe died. He's supposed to die.
That's... Well, did he die, though? Because he's still in that hospital bed.
Well, no, he did
die.
Oh,
he would have died had he gone to the Great
Beyond.
Yes,
he was.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
He only is alive because he escaped, so.
Right.
Anyway, so you get all that fun stuff, but.
So what they do is they do like a ritual. And they both, 22 and Joe, fall into the hole thinking, you know, whatever. But what happens, unfortunately, is there's like a therapy cat sitting on Joe's lap in the real world. And he wakes up and he's looking at himself and we realize we've got a body switch movie, which I don't think they ever show you in the trailer.
I don't think there's
no hints at all at this part of the movie.
I didn't watch the trailer, but I also didn't hear or know anything about that part of it. So I'm like, oh, there's a cat in this movie? Oh, he goes into a cat's body? And then looking at the posters, I'm like, oh, there's a cat, but I never realized.
No.
But this is the part where, okay, so they swap. Well, not really swap bodies, but she goes in Joe's body.
Right.
Joe swaps bodies with the cat, which I have some questions about because it's interesting.
Where does the cat go?
Are the
cats blank
this
slates?
This movie came out the
does
same
Wonder
day.
Does Wonder Woman have sex with the cat?
Yes. Yeah. Well, Mike, I'm sorry. I don't know the answer to that. But this movie came out the same day as Wonder Woman, and I thought we were going to talk about both in the same day. And so I thought it was really funny having watched them back to back. I'm like, these both have body swapping soul movies, and there's questions of where does the soul go or what, you know. So,
or maybe they're saying that cats don't have souls.
No, he
which is very
went
possible.
Up the escalator. We saw it. He does have a soul.
We did?
Yeah, they show it because they're like where is he or whatever. They like cut to it and he's going
up
the escalator.
I didn't even notice that. That's funny.
So by 22 taking the cat's body, he died.
she killed the cat.
So anyway.
Well, then that should equal the count. The count should be equal now. So Terry can leave us alone.
So, but here's the thing.
Just real quick, I'm trying to remember. I don't remember the cat on the escalator with anyone else.
So it was going to cat heaven?
That's what I'm wondering. Like, if that's the, because I was like,
that's even, if they do that, that's even crazier.
A lot of religions say animals don't have souls. And so, like, yeah. I wonder if that was their end run of, like, the cat's on an escalator that looks like the one
hilarious.
We saw. But it's going, but if it's by itself, you don't know for sure if it's going to people heaven or there's a separate animal heaven.
Well, let me also tell you
there
this.
There is a pet cemetery, I'll tell you that.
let me tell you this, though, that I just thought about as we're talking about it. Cats have 9 lives. So even though they killed one,
yeah.
Even though they killed one, they didn't necessarily actually kill the cat because they have
Batman
more lives.
Batman Returns taught me that.
Yeah. So I think that's a pretty clever way that I'm sure they thought through. Is like, oh, that's
who
a
likes
funny...
to write screenplays knows save the cat.
Yeah.
That's right.
So they killed the cat for the gag, like one of the lives, but technically didn't kill it. So that's pretty clever. But this is where we get into the trouble, like what Tom brought up earlier, is that now, okay, so the black character voiced by Jamie Foxx is now in a cat after being put in a, you know, green, very cleverly animated soul character. Now he's in a cat, and then Tina Fey, a white woman, is in his body, which looks like a black man. So I get where people could have concerns, and I'm not saying like,
well, and
I
haven't
totally
heard anyone, and I haven't dug that deeply, but I haven't seen anybody saying like, don't watch this movie or boycott this
sure.
movie. But I think, but I also think it's a fair question to ask, because at least the next time a creator finds himself in this situation,
yeah,
that might cause them to come up with a different solution somehow.
Sure,
which is the end of the world, right? Like, that's not.
But I do think
thing.
I do think in this we can leave it after this, not harp on it. But I do think in this case, these are two characters that you've gotten to know. We've gotten to know Joe and Jamie Foxx's voice and his body for the whole movie. And, you know, and I think that they do a fun body swap thing because it was a fun concept and it takes them on a wild adventure. And I don't it's not like Tina Fey is portraying a black character like in any kind of an offensive,
right.
like, you know, the character isn't black.
It's not blackface. Like, she's still voicing it like Tina Fey. It's just,
right.
it's a soul swap.
She just ended up in the in the body of a character who we've already been established. She's not being cast as,
I think where this movie really saves itself in terms of pissing people off with this issue is when he has the conversation with his mother, where he finally talks about, like, mom, that I don't want to be a teacher. I want to be a jazz musician, and you've never really recognized that.
You get to hear it from his.
They let the camera pan, and it swaps, and so you hear it how she hears it, because the audience hears Tina Fey speaking when Joe speaks, but we know the other characters are actually hearing Joe. Right.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's just the character of Tina Fey.
When he gets his big dramatic moment, they shift POV so the audience gets to hear it in the way that the mother would hear it, which is voiced by Jamie Foxx. And I think if they had robbed Jamie Foxx of that emotional moment, one, I think it would be a lesser movie, just period. Like, it's you need to hear that in the voice of the character. Of the actual character. But I think that probably calmed a lot of people down to be like, at least that big emotional moment still got to go to Jamie Foxx.
Those people that would put that much thought into it. A lot of the people that complain about things aren't even, you know what I mean? A lot of people wouldn't even give it
that. I will say most of the complaints I've seen have been like, it's still a good movie and it's still worth seeing, but this is something to discuss. I don't think that's a radical position to take.
No.
They're
not
saying burn Pixar to the ground.
But that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Those kind of conversations are totally understandable, and I love conversation starters like that. It's the people that go off the deep end that complain about things where you're
And I think that the people that are like, let's think about this, would be more like burn this bitch to the ground if that scene had gone to Tina Fey and not Jamie Foxx. And I think they'd be right, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. No, I think you make a great point, though. That does definitely elevates it, and I think it does save it. But to me, I just think that, you know, that at this point, if you're going to say, like, you know, don't watch the movie because of that or it's that offensive, it's like, no, the characters are established. It's a fun adventure with a body swap, and you also, you're in, it's tricky because if you're going to say, well, this is a fun body swap story, and then well, you know, now you've got this movie with representation, full of representation, where most of the characters are black in this movie. And then it's like, well, you know, if we want to tell a body swap story, but we also want to cast different people that look differently in different roles, it's like, well, we don't want to take the roles away from anybody either. Right. So
yeah,
this
because,
is the story we're telling.
Because that is the problem, is that if there's too much pushback, then the next time the answer is, you know what, we don't want to deal with the BS, just make everybody white.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my main point. It's like they're telling a diverse, rich story, and you're seeing a black community and black-owned businesses. His mother's a black businesswoman, which, I mean, since what, the Princess and the Frog was the last time when Tiana started that bakery? Like, I mean, you just don't see that in... Yeah. Disney movies that often, where you've got a main character that's black, and then also you're showing business owners, you're showing different walks of life and all this. And so you've got this rich black culture in this film surrounding all these black characters. And then you get to the body swap and you cast Tina Fey. She's a very funny comedian, and I think she does a darn good job with the emotional beats. I think she plays the character of 22 great.
She wrote a lot of her lines too.
Okay. Oh, that tracks. Yeah. That makes sense.
And then they get into a body swap for the zany. This is the fun zany Disney part of it. Is like, oh wow, now he's in a cat, and now
it's
Tina Fey.
Not ultimately that big a part of the movie. It's maybe 15 minutes of the whole movie, and I think that makes a difference too. Like, I think if 80% of the movie had been that, I think it would have had a very different feel as well. You know,
exactly. It's this one fun but not super major plot point, and you know, they go on this wild adventure and then things revert back to normal. So I don't think it was offensive, and again, take it for what it's worth, being who it's coming from, the three of us, but I just think at some point you do have to ask yourself, you know, what do you consider offensive? You know, I think that you have to draw the line somewhere, and you're getting all this diversity and everything, and it's a great step in the right direction, and I just don't think you should cancel it because of something like that.
No, I agree. I don't really have anything else to add. You guys kind of cleared that up real well. So they, now that they're back on Earth, we get to, 22 gets to experience all of these things that Joe was talking about.
That pizza thing.
For herself. That pizza is, I mean, because she's totally right.
She's like, never tasted. Like, they don't taste or smell or anything.
The amazingness of pizza. Yeah, for the first time, you know.
All her senses are going off like crazy because they don't have those senses in the great before, and so she's like, I don't care about this. What is this
and then,
food?
Then she has it, and she's like, oh man. Which it's interesting if they ever kind of do like a sequel, they can play on that where somehow they can figure out how to send a soul to Earth to experience those things, and be like, oh, this is what this is going to be like. And
this
then,
doesn't feel know. like the Pixar movie that they go to for a sequel.
No, I think Inside Out or Onward, maybe, like any of those. They've milked the Toy Story and Cars thing to death. And
Toy
Monsters
Story 4
Inc.,
is really good, though.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. I agree. But so while she's experiencing all of this, Joe realizes he's got a second chance to get to this show. Unfortunately, he goes and he runs into the musician and the singer, and he looks kind of out of it. And
he looks
like he's talking to
a crazy person. Yeah. He's in a medical gown. I mean, it looks like he escaped an insane asylum. And she's getting out of a cab with the rest of the band. And then he just looks crazy. So she's like, was that Teach? And then we find out from Curly that he calls him like, where are you, man? And he's like, she already found a replacement because she thought you were nuts. Like, you know,
you were a wackadoo.
Yeah.
So now he's trying to get back. And this entire time he's teaching, he's inadvertently teaching 22 about Earth and about life and about relationships and food, and 22 kind of, we finally get to the point where they're going to make it. They're going to swap back. They know where the Graham Norton character is as a way to get back.
Well, they find him and so like, how do we get back? And he's like, you have to wait until the whatever is in the line.
He's like,
the
6 p.m. And he was like, oh god, all right.
I believe you call it 5:30. Whatever. I love that character, and I think Graham Norton did a great job because
McDonald's is giving those out as Happy Meal toys right now. That character is like a Happy Meal toy
now. That's hilarious. Does it have a sign that spins when you press a
button?
It's
one side is the human face, the other side is like the soul face.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's cool.
But that's a fun character, and so they know that they have to meet back with him at 5:30. And so, like you said,
but he's got to be there at 7. Like the
or like it's the, like a half hour before the show. Or
yeah,
whatever,
the mic check is at 7 or whatever.
Maybe it's 6:30. But you're right. What's really cool is that they, you know, this adventure to get back to the body is also what Joe promised 22
right.
and teaches her about life. And eventually, like we already spoiled at the beginning, she is going to earn her badge because even though they don't realize it, she's finding a purpose and you know, experiencing all these things. And I thought the two of them had great chemistry together. I really enjoyed the Joe.
Yeah,
and 22.
I wondered if they did their stuff together. Well, maybe not. Well, is this
Pixar?
Is this pre-COVID?
Do that, but
is this pre-COVID or is this post?
I'm sure
in the middle of it.
They animate to the voices, right? So it would have been
especially if she's
going to
write some of her own lines.
I guess that's true. Yeah, I just wonder. Like sometimes they play better when they're in the same room together. And
I don't
just
know, but
did feel
they're really good. And I mean, these are two obviously professional actors. Jamie Foxx and Tina Fey have been around for a long time.
Well,
and they
also
know,
I think people forget too that Jamie Foxx, because his acting career has been so successful, I think they forget that he started in the same place Tina Fey did, which is stand up, improv, sketch comedy. Right? He started on In Living Color. You know, which was the black SNL. And I say that because it was a reaction to SNL not having enough black cast members. And so they have similar backgrounds in that regard. So like he
was Jim Carrey there, Chris Rock or there.
Their token white guy, yes.
Yeah.
And that's why some people got so frustrated that, like, there's one white guy on the show and he's the breakout star. I mean, obviously, there are other breakout stars for In Living Color, but he was, especially in that moment, was
I never even thought about that till just now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But, yeah, so
how out of place at the end of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Standing there.
Yeah. So everything's going according to plan. Unfortunately, 22 has realized it's pretty cool here. And right before they're going to go and everything's going to pop off, she runs away and they have to chase after her. And there's how does Joe get back into his bot? Do they get back up to the place before?
Well, he dies again, right?
Yeah. Like they,
what it is?
They go, but like they go back to the great before.
Right.
And she gets her Earth pass. And
yeah.
And she decides to go back to Earth.
And he's like, "No, give me that."
And no, and he's like, "I'll go with you as far as I can cuz he doesn't have an Earth pass." So he knows
but he gets his own body back at one point because
right.
he's playing
and then
in the show.
After that, then the counselors or whatever come to him and say, "We were so inspired by you. We've decided to give you a second chance."
I don't think that's the right order, though. Like,
it's not, though.
Because that's the very end. But yes. he does get back before that.
Because he goes to the show and he realizes that he's unhappy. And he goes back to Graham Norton's character and says, "You got to get me back in there."
He goes into the zone, right? He plays.
Yeah, yeah, he plays.
He puts himself
the
in the zone.
So he can talk to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And then she becomes one of these, like, creatures that never does find a purpose. So Joe,
she's a lost soul.
They were freaky, and then Joe has to like fight through all of these different mentors.
I was
that
hoping
shot
that they'd
her
have
down.
A nod to Little Mermaid, and we'd see a poor, unfortunate soul.
Wow. Oh, or I was like, a giant penis was going to show up on the castle.
All right. These giant penises with you. It's all you think about.
I didn't say about. That's the first time I said a giant penis.
I heard you wanted to build a castle made out of them, like on the cover of Little Mermaid. That was your life's purpose that you were working toward.
To spark. It's a very difficult. Yeah.
It's a spark.
As you get older in life, it's just not as sustainable. So he goes
so far,
back
so
into.
Good.
So far, so good. Yeah, it's working out all right. So he has to fight through all of these mentors that kind of talked down to 22 and said she'll never be anything. And then, of course, he comes face to face with himself and he breaks through them all. And this is where they go back to the great beyond and they say, "I'll go with you." She gets her pass and he says, "I'll go with you as far as I can go." And that's really touching. Like he knows it's kind of like Bing Bong,
yeah,
where he knows that he's not going to make it, but he doesn't. He'll take joy as far as she can go.
Not joy.
And this is kind of the same.
What? Oh, you said Joy.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. It's kind of the same. Same. Oh, yeah. You know, trope.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you were confusing them. No, similar. No. I get you. I get you.
I read that there were like multiple drafts of this script where Joe dies, where they don't let him make it.
I mean, I could see it.
Yeah,
I could see them doing. I mean, it's Pixar, so it's like, but it's not outside the realm of possibilities.
It's a very sweet moment, and I do like the whole. What it comes down to is that Joe got his big break. And at the very beginning of the movie, again, he said, if I could play with Dorothea Williams, I'll die a happy man. He got to accomplish that dream and he got to live his whole life. I mean, not saying that he shouldn't have or couldn't have lived longer, but he did get to live a long life. And if 22 doesn't go to Earth, she's never going to get to live any life other than the one day that she spent with him. So he's like, I've lived my life. You need the chance now. And plus, I died. I'm supposed to be dead. Like, that's just how it goes. And so you need to experience your life, and I think it's very sweet that he makes that sacrifice knowing that that was the way that it was supposed to play out. And then because of that touching movement, you know, he's on the escalator getting ready to ride up, and then Counselor Jerry, or no, was it Counselor Jerry? Yeah, Counselor Jerry.
Yeah.
Or was it Jerry?
No, it was Jerry.
Oh, it was Jerry. Okay.
It was Jerry.
So Counselor Jerry tells him that, you know.
No, Jerry.
Oh, Jerry. Sorry, Jerry.
Yeah.
Says that, you know, we're so moved by this that we don't usually do this, but you're getting a second chance.
I'm a little offended that you couldn't tell them apart.
I know. But don't tell Terry. And I love that. I think it was the Richard Ayoade.
He's like, we got it taken care of.
The Richard Ayoade. They cut to like, they do a flash cut to the Richard Ayoade. Jerry's up there and is like, whatever, look over there or something. And he moves the bead.
Flicks one over.
Yeah, flicks one over. And then Terry looks back and like inquisitively at the thing. Yeah.
I do like that. It's also great acting with no faces, like it's just an outline of a face.
Totally.
But still, you get exactly what's going on.
I like that moment when after Terry gets Joe back or whatever, that Terry presents themselves with an award. Like all the counselors are like, we're giving this award at your request or whatever. And so
Terry
wants an award for being so great,
and he can have it, I guess.
But then I think
what they take it away
because Joe escapes again. I just thought it's just funny. I love those little moments.
Yeah, and then he goes back to his life. We never see 22 again, do we?
No, that's the thing.
She's
is that 22 goes to Earth, and you never even get like a wink like that might be 22.
Right.
You know what I mean? We never. It's just like, well,
I think the winkiest thing they could have done is have her or him be in a class, be in one of Joe's classes.
Yeah,
well, and that would fast 22. Forward like 10 or 12 years, right?
Right. Like 10 years later or whatever. But I think that's too cute.
That could have been a sweet moment, though, if you thought that 22 was the kid. I don't know. That. I mean, I get it. It's fine the way it is, but that could have been cute.
I think it's a little too cute.
Yeah,
I think it's too cutesy.
Yeah. I think they get to see each other again. They were such good friends. Like, it's just, I think it could have been a sweet moment. If
but they have to erase her memory, right? Like that, in theory.
I also think... she was not going to remember any of it, and I don't think he's ultimately going to he'll remember the lessons but not the journey. And
right.
I also think that it would have, we've already seen that ending in another Pete Doctor movie, right? Like that's the ending of Monsters, Inc. He opens the door and
Boo's
room. Like that's like, I mean, we've already gotten that ending. And so I think that, you know, would be a little too on the nose.
Yeah. It's great the way it is, totally. I think it's wonderful that you got those sweet moments. Joe got a second chance, and he's like, you know, you don't usually get a second chance. And so the moral, at least one of them, and that I was touched upon earlier, is it's like, live every moment of your life. You know, life to the fullest.
I do love that line where she tells the story of the fish.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I want to swim in the ocean. She's like, this is the ocean. She's like, no, this is just water.
Yeah, I want.
Well,
that.
It's
I
was
like, oh man,
it's very reminiscent of a David Foster Wallace essay.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David Foster Wallace did a graduation speech called "This Is Water," and he starts off talking about how like there's two. He's like, oh, like I'm obligated to start with an allegory because that's how all these graduation speeches work. And he's like, there's two fish swimming. There's two young fish swimming. And an older fish swims by and says, hey, fellas, how's the water today? And keeps on swimming. And finally, about 2 minutes later, the one young fish turns to the other young fish and says, what the hell is water?
Oh, and, see, that's pretty good.
And then his whole speech is about like truth and life. And there's a quote where he says, the capital T truth is about life before death. Right, like it's the it's the premise of this movie. It's about the real value of education, which has almost nothing to do with knowledge and everything to do with simple awareness.
Yeah.
Awareness of what is so real and essential, so hidden in plain sight all around us all the time, that we have to keep reminding ourselves over and over, this is water.
That's cool. So, I've never heard that one, but yeah, I can definitely see. But yeah, it was a nice moment. I agree.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's a good movie. I mean, like I said,
I thought this was fantastic.
Some very
better
minor
than last week, I'll tell you that.
But yeah, but it's like, I'd also like something fun again. Like, not that this didn't have fun moments, but like something that isn't so like draining.
I just don't know if we're going to get that. And that's the thing that we were talking about earlier, is that Pixar. Oh, I was going to make the point that they're kind of like M. Night Shyamalan or Christopher Nolan, and the way that they have to keep one upping themselves. Once you become the guy,
right?
If you've got M. Night Shyamalan after The Sixth Sense, that became his thing, and he became handcuffed by it. And eventually,
and I think that's why it's time to do a swerve, right? Because it's like, you know, they've done so much existential and metaphysical stuff that it's like, you know,
what next?
Yeah, that maybe it's time to dumb it down a little bit and just do something.
Yeah,
let's go do a Looney Tunes.
But like, it's like, but that's the crux of it, though, is that it's like people expect it now, and they feel. I think that people like M. Night Shyamalan or Christopher Nolan that get more and more complicated with their sci-fi and their time travel and all this stuff. It's like they feel that weight and that pressure to, you know, outdo themselves time and time again. Audiences expect it, and then now are you going to disappoint people if you don't do it? And you know, it's that whole like. I think they're struggling with that. You know, which way do they go? Do they one up themselves? Do they try to get that next Oscar because it's that next level thing, or do they just make a cutesy movie that's fun? And so I almost feel like Pixar's become that, and now, like you said, like Joe said, Disney is still top tier animation and more of the fun stuff that can still have lessons, but more of an adventure. Where Pixar's like become the deep, you know, the deep moving,
right? Like even their fun ones have deep subject matter, and they almost all do, and that's fine. I guess it just meant when the whole thing is just about that can get a lot. And we were talking about the last fun one. I think we could say Incredibles 2, like that are screaming at their
iPhone. Still has amazingly deep lessons.
It does, and that's what I'm saying. It's always a component, but I think that's more. Because they're superheroes, it has more flat out fun moments too than something like this does.
At least we can all agree, though, that they are the best at what they do. So
absolutely.
Even though it is, you know, sometimes it may feel like it's a little more work than just checking out, it seems like it's always worth the journey. They're incredible films, and what they're doing and saying with this art form is always next level. They push it with their animation, their storytelling. You know, it's why they win an Oscar almost every year, because it's like they're just the best at what they do. And while there's a ton of other great people too, it's just like you cannot dispute that Pixar is a master at their work.
Absolutely. So I guess that brings this one to a close. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon, Patreon.com/Real Spoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, Riley accepts living in San Francisco.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.